If, as the bishop has done, one throws overboard traditional theism, one has difficulties not only in restating one's Christology, but in so many other ways also. Suppose there is no personal God, no supreme being. Then what becomes of prayer? Prayer is surely praying to God. What becomes of worship? Worship is, of course, worship of God. If there's no God, well, what function does the church serve? What you go to do every Sunday morning or every Sunday evening, if there's no God? Now, the bishop is aware of all these difficulties, but he doesn't go into them very deeply. He certainly doesn't consider the possibility, at least he doesn't seriously consider the possibility, of meditation. If there's any real defect in his book, I think it's this. He doesn't quite, it seems to me, see the connection between non-theistic religion and meditation. Prayer, worship, and theism, they go naturally together, almost hand in hand, one might say. And in the same way, with non-theistic religion, there goes concentration, meditation, mind development, whatever term one might like to use. So when it comes to the practical things, the religious life, what the religious life consists of, or what it consists in, the bishop becomes a bit vague, and he tends to reduce, apparently, the religious life, or the other regarding life, as I said a little while ago, to various forms of social service. Now, I don't want to give the impression that I'm criticizing the Bishop of Woolwich. I think he himself, his ideas and his book, have all of them introduced a very important, a very necessary catalyst, as it were, into the Church of England, and through the Church of England, into the whole Christian religion, at least in this country. And I, for one, as a Buddhist, can only hope that that little catalyst, that little seed, will do its work, and that Christianity will gradually become non-theistic, not only in principle, but also in practice. Now, it's my own view, it's my own personal opinion, that if that happens, then what results, or what is produced, will cease to be Christianity in any recognizable sense. Because traditionally, historically, Christianity is a theistic religion. And if it becomes non-theistic, if we get, as it were, a non-theistic Christianity emerging, well, that will be much more like Buddhism than it will be like the historical, traditional, theistic Christianity. Now, we are all of us, in certain respects, very conservative. When I say conservative, I don't mean politically conservative, though one might say that, of course, in Hampstead, but at least psychologically conservative. We don't like change. We don't like change where deep-rooted assumptions of our religious life generally are concerned. And it seems to me that the Bishop of Woolwich, quite naturally and even quite rightly and quite properly, has got, even though he's an almost revolutionary thinker or popularizer, a sort of emotional attachment to the tradition to which he belongs. sometimes it seems as though he's going right the way forward. And then he seems that he sort of pulls himself back a bit and hesitates. So this is only natural. This sort of thing happens to all of us when we're reaching out towards something new, towards a fresh interpretation of our religious and our spiritual life and experience. But it seems to me that if he pushes on, if he follows to its logical conclusion the course upon which he has embarked, or the line of thought which he has initiated or popularized, it will be very difficult for him to not to come to a position very closely approximating to that of Buddhism, or even to Buddhism itself. Now, human beings are not logical, they're not rational. And it would be very irrational to expect anyone to behave rationally. Certainly, in religious and spiritual matters, perhaps they shouldn't behave rationally. So I don't have any great expectations of ever having a knock on my door from the Bishop of Woolwich on the request to admit him into the fold of Buddhism. I don't see that coming. Logically, it ought. But as I've said, people are not logical. But certainly, I think it's inevitable that the good bishop will come, in the course of years, closer and closer to Buddhism, whether he knows it or whether he doesn't. And I'm quite sure that if he comes to know something about Buddhism, and if he comes into contact with Buddhists, then I'm quite sure that he will be quite delighted to recognize some resemblance between his present views and the views which have been those of Buddhism for thousands of years. I think this perhaps is all to the good. Buddhists are not very anxious to make converts. They're always happy, naturally, when someone joins them in their own quest for truth and reality. But they also see that people have to go on their own paths, individually, and that ultimately the choice is one's own. One might persuade, one might put forward points of view, but one can do no more than that. So I'm quite sure that whatever happens, whether the good bishop goes on gaily as a bishop in the Church of England, or whether he takes any other step, whether he comes to know about Buddhism or whether he doesn't, or even whether he retracts all that he's ever said that he might possibly do. But Buddhists certainly will always have towards him great goodwill for his very courageous attempt to break through convention and tradition and to come nearer to a position which they feel is Buddhistic. In these days, perhaps, when religion generally is rather on the defensive, it's not a bad thing that religious people in different religions should find themselves approximating more and more. Buddhists, of course, are very loyal to their own principles. And one of the most important of those principles is, of course, that Buddhism is a non-theistic religion. We don't make any concession on that. And if we find people in other religions, even in Christianity, coming to hold that view within the limits even of their own religion, then we are very happy about that, because we feel that they will have come thereby closer, nearer to the truth, to enlightenment. So, having heard this talk, you might, I hope, in fact feel that there's not so great a disparity between Buddhism and the Bishop of Woolwich as you might at first have supposed.